My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons, part of the Soundstone Network. Everybody, welcome to a new episode of Pixels and Polygons. It's the conversational podcast about video games hosted by me, Darren Hupke. If you are new to the show, thanks for giving it a shot and thanks for checking it out. The format's simple. I have a rotating cast of guests who come on. I ask them a single video game related question or prompt, and we talk about it. It's short and sweet. It's designed to be easy, quick listens, and it's the perfect podcast in between podcasts. So thanks for checking it out, and hopefully you enjoy the episode. If you've come back and you are a returning listener, thank you for your support. Thanks for continuing to listen to it, and thanks for checking it out. I appreciate you. You can support me and consider doing things to support me by leaving a like or writing a review or sharing a link online. All that helps and goes a long way, and it's much appreciated. I've got other ways you can support over on Patreon at patreon.com/Darren Hupke. For as little as $1 a month, you can also support the show. That will allow you to contribute icebreaker questions that I will ask in future episodes and give you a shout out by name if I select your question. So if you'd like to interact with the show a bit and support me at the same time, consider doing that. Like I said, $1 a month over on my Patreon. Same thing on my Patreon page. You can find the digital storefront for all of my publishing books. Pixels and Polygons is more than just a podcast. I've got my retro game zine issues available for purchase there digitally. I've also got the 32-bit library series of books and books like the Beat 'em Up Volume 1 available over on the Patreon shop for digital consumption. If you want physical, if you want an actual book mailed to you or a zine mailed to you, head over to pixelsandpolygons.net. That is my storefront where you can buy everything direct from me. So again, the 32-bit library books, I've got t-shirts, stickers, other merch, all the issues of Retro Game Zine and the upcoming 2025 annual. Everything that I've got, you can find there. So if you want to support the show, if you want to support me, consider purchasing or checking out any of those projects digitally, physically, or through Patreon. Thanks again for listening to the show, and hopefully you like what you hear, and you come back next week. Enjoy the episode after this ad break, and stay retro. Bye.
Hello, we are Kirby Conversations, a podcast on Kirby, along with other adjacent subjects like Smash Brothers, HAL Laboratory, and other related Nintendo games.
In each episode, we take an in-depth, well-researched look at a Kirby topic, drawing on our decades of experience playing Kirby games, creating Kirby-related content, and working in and around the video game industry. I'm Sean Douglas. I'm a theater and video game journalist.
And my name's Bridget. I'm an online Kirby commentator and collector.
Our team also includes photographer and Nintendo ambassador Kai, Captain Dangerous Parker, and Gigi, the editor-in-chief of Wick Kirby. Join us for deep dives into Kirby's history, interviews with industry professionals, and even inside looks at Nintendo, as together we explore all things Kirby and HAL Laboratory. You can find Kirby Conversations on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Anyway, welcome to Pixels and Polygons, a conversational podcast about video games. I am Darren Hupke, and I'm back again. But this week, I have a new guest. So new guest alert. Alert the sirens, ring the bells. We have a new voice. This week, I am joined by Cal, who you may recognize from, if you listen to other long-running, more important retro gaming podcasts, the Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast. But Cal, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me and answering some questions.
Well, thank you for having me and an auspicious welcome, really. I don't usually get sirens. I usually get pushed out the door.
Well, I physically can't do that. You know, we're separated by mini miles at this moment. So we'll have to just, listeners will have to deal with it. We'll have to listen to you for the duration of the show. But again, thanks for doing the show. You're one of the hosts of the Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast. How long have you been doing that? Do you want to maybe fill in folks who maybe don't know much about you? Give us a little brief bio.
We don't like to look at the duration of the top 47,858 games of all time podcast because it's got to be more than 5 years. But I think I like kind of was like I start counting back and I'm like, oh, that's going above 5 years. How many years is that going to go back? Because if that number like hits like 10, it may have hit 10. I'm like, that seems like too much. That's a lot. Because we do it's a weekly podcast and it's like multiple. We kind of like changed our format like four times because we've had been running for that long. So at the moment, it's like a weekly one. We release one a week and we release one for patrons. But we also did a bit where we release multiple ones a week. And what we do is we talk about like. At the moment, it's two games an episode and one for our Patreon listeners separately released. And we rank the games that we talk about on a big list. And so the cool thing about the big list is it's huge and everyone hates it because it is every game that we have ever talked about on the show formally. We obviously name drop other games as we go for reference, but... In an order that is supposed to be scientifically objectively correct, and that is like the top game is Tetris, and they keep threatening to put stuff above it, but I really hope they don't succeed. And then at the bottom, I think it's still the Fabulous Wonder on the Commodore 64.
Well, right now, it's Rise of the Robots, actually 1523.
Did I manage to put Rise of the? No, I must have. I must have forced Rise of the Robots there. Thank you for... I don't have my own list open, but apparently you do.
Oh, yeah, I popped it open, yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's a... I really... Thank you. I'm not going to forget that Rise of the Robots is at the bottom, because I kind of know where... I put a lot of the games on the list, but all the ones I didn't put there are in the wrong place, as far as I'm concerned. I usually know where stuff is, or to some extent. But... Really, the show is more about trying to talk about the different games that we cover and both what they kind of like are and what they are. So it's not just like this is literally what the game is about. It's kind of like if it's got an interesting history, we might talk about that. If it's got interesting reviews or reception, we might talk about that. Episodes are, I'm going to say, only about an hour long, but that I think is now they're 2 hours long because it's an hour per game. Sometimes that means we can't fit in everything. So it's just kind of what we think is the most important thing to talk about. But a little bit like this podcast, which I'm under the impression it is done like this, it's also pretty live. We only kind of edit for time and like waffle. So it's not a show that is just strictly scripted and edited down. An episode will end up whatever it is. We try and keep it relatively listenable is one of the important things. So if it's too dry, we'll try and make it more interesting for our listeners. And we think it's pretty good. We think the show's pretty good. We keep doing it and we're gonna keep doing it as long as we physically can. But that's an offshoot of Hardcore Gaming 101, which is what the, I guess it's like the Hardcore Gaming 101 podcast. But the actual podcast as well, we've been doing an iteration of podcasts for Hardcore Gaming 101 for, now that's over a decade for sure. Because we did a couple of different podcasts for Hardcore Gaming 101. Like over the years, I think the site founder, Kurt, did like one gaming podcast like an episode like 15 years ago or something, like just gave it a stab, so we can say that we're an extremely long running one. But you know, I guess people who listen to the show, I should say, not like the show, people who like the show like the show, but people who listen to it seem to stick with it, so I guess we're doing something right in that regard.
Yes, I'm a listener. I have been for probably about 5 years or so now. It's a good one. I mean, it's my commute is a lot longer now, so like now I definitely can like add in a few more podcasts into the mix. So
that's terrible.
Yeah, I mean it's a long commute, so you know I gotta add something to keep me entertained. So yeah, I like to pop in episodes, obviously, you know, in the week to keep things exciting for me. And I think it's great. I was actually going to ask you about that because Kurt from the, you know, the website proper and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I've worked with him on some of the books that I've done, the 32-bit mm-hmm. library
He's
books
great guy.
And everything. Yeah. Awesome dude and everything. So I was actually curious what his involvement was with the podcast. Like, did he just fall off years ago or did he initially start it and then, you know, just hand it over? But, yeah, I didn't realize it was,
if you really want the little side details, it was the podcast itself was mostly started originally as a game club. And so it was a monthly game club. And so we would play a game all together, and then we would talk about our experience playing that game. So it was kind of like, because, you know, like a lot of older games, some of those games were intended to sort of be played blind, but also with a community, like, you know, like just with a group of people. So, you know, like if you were going to a school or whatever, you would, you know, talk about a thing as you were trying to play through it. And so we did that for a bit, and we got, I don't remember the number of episodes out of that. But we then swapped from the game club format we just talk about games that we have intentionally played. We also take nominations from listeners, so we get kind of like a very wide set of games. But that was started in the Hardcore Gaming 101 forums, and part of it was to give the website a podcast, because obviously it mostly covers games. It doesn't have a lot of audio content. Kurt and we've tried like video stuff on and off as well. Like, you know, it's just, it was one of the things where you're like, all right, well, people like audio, so we should try and get audio. And we tried some video as well and that sort of thing. Like, it's trying to keep the website current. I don't think doing podcasts keeps the website current at this point in time, but yourself, if you're, you know, you listen to it for several years, that's like, people listen to it. So we're like, all right, well, we're happy to keep making it. And I also do think, like, you know, commutes are like our number one like listener base. It's like people that are stuck with nothing else to do that want to listen to something. That's our captive market, which is good, I guess. But
yeah,
like it's a Kurt has not too much influence on the show, but I try and drag him into episodes whenever I think that it's something that he would be interested in. He's on, I don't know, like a few a year, but other than dropping in help for us, if he's done any research for like the books or the site, he might say, hey guys, here's some information about this thing you're going to be doing, and so we might incorporate that if he's not on the episode. But we're rudderless. We choose our own direction based on the tides.
Oh, cool. Well, that's good to know. Yeah, I had never known that. So, good back history for me to, you know, ponder about as I'm listening to random episodes.
And cut out of this episode entirely for time.
No, I don't edit. You are correct. This is unedited. We do it live. Fuck it. We'll do it live. And that's how it works.
Well,
so
I shouldn't have said all those terrible things.
Well, if it's really, really terrible, we'll have edited it out and we'll let people think that maybe you have said some really, really terrible things that have been edited out. But
it's gone.
They'll never know. Well, let's get into it. Let's do, some this or that. So I'm going to throw some this or that at you. The point is you have to select one and, you can explain why or not. The choice is yours. What do you think? Let's see. Where do I start here? Let's do PlayStation or Saturn.
It's PlayStation. I mean, there's no. All right. Well, like, there's no contest, and the reason is, I would have to throw out like hundreds of games if I pick Saturn. So I'm no. I
100% agree.
Will live without Bulk Slash.
There's people. There's those Saturn fans who I feel strange thoughts for, but there's people who love it. But there's no way you would be able to pick that over the PlayStation.
It's just, no.
Well, arcade or console?
That's much tougher. That's a you really you're that's you're making me choose between the children, right?
Like, mm-hmm. You've got a metaphorical gun to your head. Is it a metaphor?
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe pull the trigger, right? Like, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Episode's over.
Look, I don't want to. I won't blow it out. So I'm going to go with console. But if you ask me the question tomorrow, it might be arcade. So, you know.
What are those, like, I mean, what's those, like, fond arcade memories? Like, are there specific games that are just clearly just, like, irreplaceable? Like, what are some of those heavy hitters for you in the arcade space?
Oh, but what it actually is that I think the arcade is a special kind of space for people that play games. Like, it becomes, like, a shrine, a kind of like holy site for people who play games. Like, it is a you can go there and you can be surrounded by people that are also there to play games. And I think that's something that, like, it makes you go like, oh yeah, I'm not just one weird creep who, like, just buys games and then buries them in, like, the basement. It's like, haha, time to sit here and just play games. It makes you, you know, it makes you feel like, well, now I'm sitting here in a basement playing games with other people, and that feels way more social. Like,
that's interesting.
It makes you feel better, you know, like you feel cool and good about it. Also, the screens in the arcade, those like Astro City, like any of the like proper units, they are so beautiful. Those are like gorgeous screens. You see a row of them and you're like, this is it.
Yeah, I do like a well-maintained arcade, or like a large gathering of just like a curated collection, you know, of things. There's this place here. We've only been to it once, and it's not even that far from where we live, but we took my oldest daughter there once for her birthday. And they're only open. It's in like some odd like business complex, and they're only open for like 4 hours a night. Like, they open once the other businesses close, and from like 8 p.m. to midnight or something like that. But you go there, you just pay $10 or so, and then all the games are free play, but they're all like organized by like genre and era and everything, and they're all well-maintained cabinets of like all styles. And it's just really neat to kind of go in and see what it may have been like, you know, even essentially back when these were like new games and everything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just something really entertaining and warm and fun feeling to kind of go back and do that.
Because, like, you know, like, it's like there might be like 30 machines in an like a small arcade, like 30 machines. This is a small mid-sized arcade. That's like, you know, like I can open up like my Steam, or I can lean over and look at like a stack of CDs, and like that's the whole arcade, like right there in that like screenshot of Steam, or like that little pile there. But it's much more tangible and much cooler when it's a row and you're just seeing them all fire off at once. It's a special feeling. It's very cool.
Yeah. I know I said we do this live. This is literally the first time this ever happened. My doorbell just rang for 1 second, and with no other child awake, I need to go see what this is really quick. So this will be a brief, strange pause, not known for this podcast. Give me one
second. Don't edit it out. I'll keep them warm.
Yeah, keep them warm. Give us your thoughts.
Like, I'm working the material here. All right. Welcome to the top 47,858 games of all time. We objectively, scientifically, and definitively rank the games that you nominate. Today on the show, I'm going to be talking about Dangan. That's right, Dangan. This game was produced by, well, so developed. I usually say developed because it's nominated by me, obviously. But it was developed by, what's their name? I don't have the disc here, but it's they did that like school fighting Saturn game. It's not called Rumble. I think it's like translated to like Rumble in the School or something. They did that. You can find him. It was published by KSS in 2000, I think. 2000. It's a Japanese exclusive game. It's pretty good. It's like a top-down shooter, but they kind of don't really understand how like a shooting game works. So it's more of like a top-down beat-em-up, and it runs really badly. I don't know why they did it like that. Like, it's pretty poor for like a 2000 game. Like, it's very badly optimized. It's like pop-in. How do you get pop-in on a top-down game? But they pulled it off. And there's like, you know, there's two playable characters. Now, one of them's name is Siegfried? Nah, that doesn't sound right. But it's like a boring name.
I'm going to be very curious to know what this is. Going back to listeners, I would like to even maybe just release it and have me hear it live for the first time in the actual posted episode. That could be a nice roll of the dice.
Yeah, you've never done it before. It's live. You can't change something that's live. It's done.
Well, thank you for doing that. It was a delivered pizza that my wife ordered, and the lady was not going to just leave it at the door. So I'm glad I did that. I didn't realize that my wife had ordered pizza right now for me while she was out of the house.
You get pizza. All right. Okay. This is a pizza show now.
Yeah, now we are on the most unique episode of Pixels and Polygons. Appreciate you all for listening. Thank you, Cal, for keeping the mic warm. We are going to keep it interesting and actually not edit this out, and this will be fun. But let's continue with the this or that. So we'll do one more. Let's see. Let's make this a good one. Let's have you... Oh, I said good one. Now I'm putting pressure on me to actually pick a good one here. This is going to be a random one. Let's just say Shenmue or Yakuza.
Well, this is going to be disappointing, maybe to Yakuza fans, I guess. But I haven't played a single Yakuza, so it's going to Shenmue. It's a default. I'm sorry. It's like a. I own like three of the Yakuza, but it's one of those series that, you know, has hit the point where I'm like, all right, what? I understand you could onboard it like several different games, but I'm like, well, I should at least attempt to play an early one, but then I don't want to play all of them, but there's a lot of them. My intention is actually to play the one that no one wants to play, the
zombie one?
Zombie one, yeah. Dead Souls or something. Yeah, I'm like, I don't care. Like, that one sounds like the one that's for me. It's gonna be crap, but I don't care. That's the one that sounds like it. Like
that's funny.
The mangy bastard of the franchise. That's my dog.
Yeah, that series is just one that's gotten away from me too. Like, I wanted to play the original, and I did. I played like a demo for it, and was like I wanted a cool beat 'em up on the PS2. This will be fun. And then I just never got around to actually buying it. And then by the time I knew it, a sequel was out, and I was like, okay, well, eventually I'll get these. And then suddenly there was 12, and it has a new name, and it's a new genre now, and there's been multiple spinoffs, and I just, like, I have no idea what's going on anymore. So I in my head, I think I'm going to play, like, some of those, like, remade ones, the Kiwami ones, but I've even purchased them, but I've just yet to ever boot them up and play them. So maybe one day, but at that point, it's been... What? I mean, since that original release, it's probably been 15, 20 years, you know? I mean, I have no idea when I'll ever actually get to them. But I like to think I will.
Big backlog. I understand it.
All right. Well, let's... we'll be finished with that. Let's do an icebreaker before we get into the main topic and main question. I've been liking this question a lot, and it may have you think for a moment, but do you have a favorite or one of your favorite mini games or game within a game that you can share? Is there?
Okay. I don't remember a lot of anything that I do ever.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Give me a sec. This is going to be a little one because I my head's now full of mini games. But which one will actually rise to the surface here and get answered?
Cream that will rise to the top.
Yeah. I mean, mini game. Oh god, it's just now I got that stupid Mario Party one. Of course I do. Why would that? It's gonna be tough to shake. You know the one. It's the one. You know it. If you've seen the things, you'd know it. It's the stupid one with on the balls. I really like the ball bouncing one.
Oh,
that
yeah,
one's
yeah.
really good. Yeah, that I can't remember the exact name of it, but yeah, they're on the balls. You knock them off the balls. It's like the it's like Reactor, the arcade game, and Is it like the Namco? Is it Namco that did like a ball knocking game as well? They must have like called like Gravitos or Atmos or something like that. Those are fun, and that's a good instance of that kind of thing. There's a mini game that I can kind of like picture in my mind, but I can't remember what it's from. But I was like, this is as good as the main game. I'll just play this, but I don't want to drag this out. So if I ever remember it, I'll yell it in the future. But yeah. I mean, let's just go with like I remember the Mario Party one. So that's pretty good. That means that it was distinct and fun.
Okay. All right. There it is. That is a choice. So you've had some extra time to get the juices flowing and everything and get ready for the main episode topic because you helped fill the mic while I had to walk away. But we are now ready to answer the main episode topic. And one of the questions you selected to answer is the evergreen one that I love. Like, if I could pivot this podcast to being just one question again and again, this is what I'm going to pivot to. But that day is not today, but I'm glad you still selected this one. But what is an average game or a below average game even that you love that doesn't get enough attention? So Cal, what is that game for you that you wanted to bring to the show?
The answer to that is, of course, Konami's, what is it? It's 1996. It's 1996. Absolutely in no way smash hit. Speed King. And if you are not from Japan and also for some reason you manage to see one kicking about, also known as Road Rage, which is genuinely one of the worst selections for what the game is I could genuinely come up with. It's like just a terrible, terrible name because it's Speed King. It's basically if Konami made Wipeout is essentially what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, it's a PlayStation game, but it's actually an arcade game. But
where did you play it at? Did you play the PlayStation version or did you play the arcade version? I've never even seen the arcade cabinet for it. Actually, wait, wasn't this didn't this have like a really bizarre, like overly expensive and irrational like arcade cabinet? Or am I confusing this with a different game?
No, you are not confusing it. You are correct. So this one, the arcade machine is Konami's Virtual Gear, which is the best I can give you is, you know those like big like space shuttle things like that you could put at like fairgrounds and like indoor like amusement centers where it's like you pile like a couple of rows of people in and they kind of like pretend to go like on roller coasters and stuff. Yeah. And they like bop up and down and go side to side. It's basically that scaled down to one person. It just fits one person, but it can do full 360 degrees rotation. So it's kind of like a little bit close to like, I don't know, an astronaut trainer or something. Like it moves all over the place and it takes a lot of space. It's relatively expensive. And yeah, Speed King was released for that. I think if you've seen one of these machines, I think it's much more likely that you would have seen an GTI Club in it, because I believe that was semi-popular. I don't think there's too many of these working left or about, but that's a car game where you're in like cars, and I feel like car simulator where you like drive a car and then the box that you're in moves is almost an evergreen arcade concept, right? Like you don't really have moving chairs in your house, so if you put a moving chair with a car game in an arcade, someone will be relatively interested, right? It's just, this is an evergreen thing. I think Solar Assault was also available in it, but Speed King, that was, that one, it didn't stick around very long. I think because it was just kind of like, this car game's more interesting. It's better for general audiences, but Konami then successfully got it ported to the PlayStation 1. And so I have never played it on the arcade unit. I have never seen an arcade unit of it in my life. In fact, if you go onto the internet and you try and find footage of someone playing the arcade game, you won't. There is, I believe, one video from like a trade show or like a Konami Center in like 1995. and that is the only footage of the arcade version in play to date online, as far as I know. It's not a well-documented one, but Konami decided to make their money back, I guess, and kind of slapdashedly ported it to the PlayStation 1. And it is disgustingly accurate to the arcade system. Mm. And if you can imagine a relatively powerful, because it was, you know, you don't make a full moving cabinet and underpower the graphics, right? That's stupid. No one's going to do that. So it's a really good looking, like I would say the footage that you got kind of, let's go with Dreamcast-y for it. You know, like it's a good looking machine. Like it's a good looking 3D game. And the home port is obviously on the PlayStation and it doesn't have a moving cabinet. So if you take a moving cabinet game with powerful graphics that demand decent hardware and you throw it on the PlayStation on the cheap, you don't end up with a good game.
Well, the what about it then speaks to you. What is it, just the history and the audacity of trying to do all of that that kind of helps like scratch an itch for you? Or did you actually like purchase this at some point and found something redeeming or something that you thought they took a swing and you can at least appreciate it for that? What's the reason that you enjoy it?
So I didn't know that it was an arcade port when I originally picked it up. Now, the reason I started playing it is very simple. It's that it supports the Negicon, and that's the Namco's Twisty controller, the Negicon. And that's I automatically think that any game that uses that is fun, and I really like Wipeout because that's also one of the that's one of the best games that use the Negicon. It's very famous for it. It's sometimes considered, at least like in, I think like in PAL territories, the Negicon is kind of considered like, well, you play Wipeout with that. That's what it's for, because it's very suitable for that. It's a controller that you actually twist to turn, so it's kind of a fake hand wheel that you just kind of use. It's got triggers and that sort of thing, and it works really well for playing Wipeout. Once you played a lot of Wipeout, you look at the library of games that support this controller on the PlayStation, and you very quickly arrive at Speed King or Road Rage in PAL territories, but don't play the PAL version if you can help it. It's also really expensive, I think, because it didn't sell well because it's not very good. But a 50 hertz like downgraded port is one you probably want to avoid for, you know, a budget release as such. But so I played it and I'm like, well, this isn't very good, but I'm going to stick with it, because there's not like a wide selection of future races that by default support the controller that I'm enjoy using. And as I got over its quirks, and it has a lot of quirks, because it's like a very strange game to play, because it has this arcade provenance. So it makes sense when you understand that it's a direct arcade port, because it's very floaty. And when you hit a wall, if you hit it too hard, too fast, The game does the funniest thing, because in almost every other game that you will ever play, when you hit a wall in like a racing game, one of two things will happen. Your speed will either go to zero, or you'll just kind of like bounce off it, right? Like that's like the most normal two things. In this game, if you hit a wall hard enough, you do a full 360, and you may do a second full 360. So you bump into a wall, and you'll do a 720. And the reason it does this right is because if you're in a moving cabinet, knocking into a wall and doing a 720 probably feels pretty cool. Like, whoa, I crashed. But on the PlayStation, you're just like, what the hell? Why am I spinning? This is so stupid. Hurry up. Let me drive in the driving game. But it's very floaty. All of its like mechanics are like, exist to show off this moving cabinet that obviously doesn't exist for your home console. And you have to kind of get used to its weird quirks. But because it's made for this weird floating cabinet, it has this like interesting floaty realism to how it works. Because you basically, you got your standard turn in your like hover car, which feels very much like a hover car. Like it, and I believe this is intentional as well. When you try and take like turns, you have air brakes. You got your, you know, your left air brake, your right air brake. They might be boosters. I don't remember. They achieve the same thing, but your like car kind of like leans up, like it, like, you know, it drifts upwards. So it's kind of like on a rocker. And I'm pretty sure that if you were in the actual cabinet, it would have moved a little bit. So you kind of like, whoa. But most future racing games kind of aren't going to be designed like this. So what you end up with is you end up with a interesting to play game. Counting that you make sure you're using something with analog controls, even if you use some sort of like analog stick that can go into Nejicon mode or something. It's actually a pretty playable game. It has a terrible frame rate because they may have just reduced the draw distance until it got a relatively stable frame rate. I'm not gonna lie to you. The game is not good. It's a game that if you play it enough, you'll be like, maybe I like it now. Maybe I can see what it was doing. But you kind of do have to squint. You do have to be like, This is like this because it's designed for something completely different. And also, I have to put it in first person mode because adding those extra polygons from your like space car on the screen, that'll kill your frame rate. You have to put it in first person.
Oh boy. Oh, I do remember now. I came across this game digging in, doing some research on Snatcher. And Konami threw like a bunch of like references to a lot of their properties, not just, you know, Snatcher and stuff, but threw a lot of references in the game. Like, are they like obvious and are they like in the PlayStation version of it? Are they like obvious and out there? Like, is it still like Neo Kobe where the graces take place and everything? Or is it just not like you have to like read somewhere in some loading screen to notice any of that stuff?
It's an interesting game, yes, because like, yes, it is set in the Snatcher world. It is probably literally set in Snatcher world. It's a racing game. It doesn't have any real plot, as far as I can tell. There may have been a plot somewhere, but it's not shown in the game in any real sense. It's set in Neo Kobe. I believe it is explicitly the Snatcher setting as such. And that's because, like, I think the original arcade release was, I think it was 95 when they were shopping this one around. It was basically like a very intentional, like, yeah, Snatcher, totally. That's got a future hover car in it. So this is the racing game of the future hover cars. Like, that's, like, that part, like, makes sense. It doesn't really lean into it in the game. But yeah, like Namco does with Ridge Racer, all of the vehicles that you drive, and they're all like F-Zero or Wipeout-y kind of style future cars. Some of them are a little boring looking, but fortunately it has a bunch of secret cars that are definitely not boring looking. But a lot of them are named after like random Konami properties. It doesn't factor into anything. But there is a car called the Jungler. Like, this is... This game has a Jungler reference. Like, that's bizarre. Like, that's like Konami's kind of crappy Pac-Man maze game. And it's like, you could drive the car from the arcade game, which obviously doesn't exist. they've got like two different Metal Gear references. One of the cars is named Metal Gear and one of them's named Solid Snake. Why not? Of course. It's very general lip service to it. It doesn't mean a lot, but there are secret cars. And so in those secret cars, there is literally the car from Snatcher, you know, like the blue hover police car that is Gideon is his name, isn't it?
Gillian. Yeah.
Oh, Gillian. Okay. Yeah. So his car is in it. This game doesn't have drivers. Like, there's no pictures of drivers. Some racing games do that, but this one doesn't. So you don't get a picture. You can't confirm that it might be the guy, but it's like, I think it's called a tricycle. At least it's called a tricycle in the game that I'm talking about, Speed King. It's called the tricycle. I guess it's a tricycle. Snatcher, probably it is.
Yeah, I forget what it's called. I don't even remember what it was called actually in Stature, or maybe they don't even say it what it is, but somewhere it's probably written down somewhere, and that's why they got that name.
I would expect so. Like, because, like, you know, it's the cop from Blade Runner, right? Like, it's the cop from Blade Runner, but they kind of like smudged it a bit. So now it's in this game, which is good. And it's got, like, the weird stuff is that if you play through this game into, like, the deeper part of this game, which is, it's got, like, four tracks. It's technically five, but the fifth track barely counts. But it's got, like, four tracks, so there's not much going on. But, yeah, like, if you get in there deep enough, it's got Twinbee in it. So you can it's just Twinbee. It's just literally a 3D Twinbee. Like, it's him. I don't know if that's the first time Twinbee shows up in a 3D game. It might be. It's Twinbee from Poppin' Twinbee.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. That'd be cool.
He's in there. And it's, you've got, I'm not going to get the name right, but it's like Aitsu, Ajitsu, Aijitsu. It's the red stick figure that flies on a paper airplane. And I think he's in Parodius, you know, that.
Mm-hmm. The parody. Gradius. Game, whatever, the Konami classic. Yeah, people love it.
Yeah, he's in it, and it's just literally him in 3D. He's unplayable. If he touches a wall, he does the spin out, which is very painful because the game is designed to make you hit the walls. Because the arcade machine, if you hit a wall, it would be like, whoa! So it kind of like filters you into the walls a bit, unless you're really, really good at some of the tracks. So he's basically unplayable. And of course, it has the Vic Viper, which is the ultimate unlockable vehicle in this one. Again, maybe the first time the Vic Viper shows up in 3D. But the strange thing about this is that Konami were apparently making a Vic Viper-themed racing game literally called Vic Viper.
Yes, and this is actually what recently came up in a newsletter. Mark Normandin, I follow him on Blue Sky. But he has a newsletter called Retro XP, and at the end of November, he released one. And I thought that's what this was. He was talking about that Vic Viper battle racing game that was being developed and mentioned Speed King in that article that he has. So if you haven't been following Mark Normandin, listeners, on Blue Sky, do that and subscribe to his newsletter. But yeah, I that was the first time I ever actually heard of or saw anything about Vic Viper battle racing.
Yeah, it's a. I guess I think it might be his, but it's several people's white whale. I think of arcade games because Konami have kept a lid on most of their like prototype alpha. Like I don't know how many Konami leaks because Nintendo have had a huge like leak of their stuff. I think you've had Capcom have had decent sized leaks here and there. I don't think the Konami stuff has leaked out very much. The Vic Viper game is like non-existent. I think there's like a couple of photos about of like what it might have been. But Speed King came out before Vic Viper, I think. Well, Vic Viper didn't come out, of course. But like, I think Speed King was out.
Yeah, it was meant to be. Yeah.
I don't know. So maybe they would have put Vic Viper in the Virtua Gear. Don't quote me on that. I have no idea. But like, maybe they thought Speed King didn't go because it didn't have a recognizable anything attached to it. But the Vic Viper in this is probably, I don't know if you've got enough photography available, but it might be the Vic Viper from when they tried to make Vic Viper. This game doesn't really feel like it has a lot of bits and pieces from like the bin in it. It's very, very direct arcade port. Based on the footage that you can find of the original game, it's very direct. It's probably, I would guess, like them basically copying the code base across to the PlayStation as best as they could, as cheaply as they could. But yeah, Vic Viper's in it. It's the best. Well, it's either the best or near to the best vehicle in the game to drive. So that's good if you like the Vic Viper, which why wouldn't you? Also, he comes with his own theme song, which is actually one of the things that makes Speed King really endearing. It has a lot of music. You wouldn't expect it, but
yeah, that's they got to fill that CD up, you know. They got space in the disc, you know, you may as well make use of it. That's the power of the PlayStation.
It really is, cuz like the game, as you're I'm sure you're aware, and your listeners probably know this kind of crap as well, but When they did like CD ports, like home ports of arcade games, they often threw in a second soundtrack, right? Because like, look, you got to buy this game. I know you played it in the arcade, but now there's different music. You could select different music. Look at that. Give us 5,800 yen. How about that? And this game does that as well. Like it has its own. It has a different soundtrack attached to it, which is interesting because like I doubt there is anyone on this planet at any point except the actual composer of like Speed King's arcade soundtrack that has really heard the Speed King soundtrack to any degree. But it's got the arcade music. It's got a completely different set of songs, which is like the, I guess, the home version music. Then it has like, I think, some extra tracks, which are like a phantom mix. I'm not sure if some of this stuff may have been from Vic Viper. You'd need to get Vic Viper to find out. But there's just like quite a lot of stuff piled up. Like the regular soundtrack is kind of like rock music. It's kind of like a bit close to F-Zero. It's kind of what you would expect Konami to put on like a racing future game in like 1995. The remix or like the new stuff that they added feels a lot more Wipeout. It's a lot more like techno, a lot more electric. And that's like really cool. And then they threw in like remix music or like other songs for like their guest star characters. So there's like one for, I think, Parodius or Gradius. Well, one for Gradius, one for Parodius. And I think, I don't know if it's like Snatcher music, but there's extra music for like the Tricycle. It's got its own song kind of attached to it as well, which is very silly because it means if you pick one of these cars, unless you set your soundtrack to a custom option, which you can pick, it's just going to play the same song and only one song because that's their song, which is silly. It overrides the stage music.
Wow. Well, yeah, that's some, that's a deep cut. I probably think this is the most, you know, the deepest, obscurest pull for this question that I've done so far in the podcast. But I love it. I love the Konami stuff. I'm a big Konami, you know, fan myself, having been like, you know, Metal Gear, Snatcher, Gradius, like all, there's just too many good things that Konami has done and pretends to not ever want to do again, you know, in these recent years. But yeah, Speed King, or the not as cool title, Road Rage.
Road Rage, which is that one sounds like to me, Road Rage sounds like someone making like a Carmageddon style knockoff game, like, but like either like way worse than Carmageddon, like trying to be super edgy, or trying to be like very clean, but still get the Carmageddon mark. Don't know which way I'd go with it, but.
It's funny that your mind goes to the potential knockoff thing, because my mind, similarly, it just reminds me of The Simpsons Road Rage, which was essentially the Crazy Taxi knockoff that I think they ultimately were like sued for or something, or maybe it was Hit and Run that they were getting beef for. I don't remember, but there was some controversy with one of those Simpsons games.
Yeah. They were not thrilled about that, which is like, we own taxis and arrows. Come on, Sega. Seriously?
They've got the rights to it. You know, hey, you know, we got to respect Sega. Arrows are their thing. But no, cool. Thank you for coming in and picking this game and bringing this to the show. But I mean, that's the point. That's what the episode is. That's what the topic was. And we did the thing. So we answered the question, y'all. Thank you for listening along. Thank you again, Cal, for owning the hot mic while I was dealing with my interruption. But again, we do it here live.
Pizza time.
Uninterrupted. We do it here live. What would you like to plug or promote or share? Would you like people to follow you or find you anywhere? Is there anything you'd like to maybe highlight or broadcast before we wrap the episode, Cal?
I mean, the easiest thing to do would be to listen to my podcast, unless you didn't like listening to me on this show, in which case it's literally the same thing, but on a different podcast. So don't do that. But that's the top 47,858 games of all time podcast. That one's really easy to find because no matter how bad the search engines get, there isn't like a top 47,856 games of all times or anything kind of like, you know, sideways knockoff of our show. We'll still show up. And that's probably the best thing to do. You can try and find me on social media. It's not hard, but again, like if you, I feel like if you were wanting to follow me, you'd already be following me on the social media I post on. It would be, it'd be weird not to. That's up to you. But listen to the podcast, you know, this one. The other one's fine as well.
Yeah, listen to them both. Listen to them both. Go seek it out and find it. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure you probably are. Like, I have my 10 of listeners compared to yours. I'm sure there's a significant, you know, overlap in 100% of them. There's not even a Venn diagram. It's just a flat circle.
I was hoping that they would, like, listen to either your or my podcast in order, and then be like, what the hell? He's back again?
That's the time loop. But all right. Well, thank you. I definitely hope to have you again on a future episode. Spoiler alert, that's going to happen here in moments, and you'll just hear it in weeks later. But thank you, Cal, for joining the show, and y'all have a great rest of your week. Bye.
Bye.
Listen to Flashback 64, the chronological Nintendo 64 podcast. Hosts Gooey, McKenna, and friends flashback to the 90s and early 2000s with a look at the Nintendo 64's catalog and its contemporary, cultural, and historical context. Starting with the console's launch titles and proceeding in release order, we discuss classics like GoldenEye, Super Mario 64, and Star Fox 64, as well as some not-so-beloved games, lesser-known titles, and everything in between. Along with game-specific deep dives, we also cover other bits of pop culture from the time, like films, music, and more. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.